Guardian Unlimited.
I'm Rosie Swash, it's Rocktober and this is Music Weekly. Coming up on this week's podcast, we say hola, salut and ciao to Manu Chao. He'll be telling us why he hates his stuff being described as world music, how the music biz is a new imperialism, and how he chooses whether to write songs in French, Spanish or English. Also in the show, we take a peek at Control, the new biopic about the life and times of Joy Division frontman Ian Curtis, and we discuss Radiohead's new Honesty Box album and how it'll impact on the rest of the music world. Plus, we'll be reviewing new music from Kate Nash, The Hives and Metronomy. Don't you forget it, this is Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. I'm your master of ceremonies for today, so let me propose a toast to my two partners in the pod. First of all, it's your friend and mine, Guardian music writer at large, Tim Jones.
Hi, Rosie. Good to be back here for the third time.
How are those headphones working out?
They're good. I've got it at the side of my temple.
Lamax style.
Yeah, Lamax style.
And back in speaking mode, it's Music Weekly producer Ben Green.
Hello, Rosie.
Now, Ben, I think we should be up front and break it to our listeners right now. We lost the title of Best Music Podcast at the BT Digital Music Awards last night. We lost it to Hospital Records.
But not Hospital Radio, which would have been...
which is what I thought it was. I was a little bit confused. Still am a bit confused.
Oh, it's an uber-trendy drum and bass label. But there's no harm in coming second in these things, probably. But thank you to everyone who voted for us.
Yeah, and which is mainly my mum and yours. Yeah. Here's something that might cheer you up. That's Merry Blues by Manu Chao. Born in France to Spanish parents, Manu is one of the most diverse musicians around, both as a solo artist and with his band Radio Bemba, who's tried his hand at rockabilly, punk and reggae, but still he gets consigned to the world music section at reputable music outlets. It's a label he's none too pleased with, so when he popped into our studio, I asked how he would define himself as an artist.
My only way to define myself is say, I'm Manu. I don't know, I cannot analyze my music and I don't want to. That's the music coming out of me and no name for that, except maybe Manu. World music I don't like.
Why don't you like it?
Because I don't like the label. It means nothing. World music, the world is big, it means AC/DC is world music,
yeah.
Maybe. And also in a political way or economical way, all the artists that talk about world music, they're from Africa, from South America, but the business is still in London or Paris or New York. So that's kind of colonialism, no?
Well, you touched there a little bit on politics, because obviously you're very politically outspoken. And I just wondered if you had to define yourself politically as opposed to musically, is that easier for you to do, or are you still just...
Politically, I define myself like lost in this planet. I don't feel at ease with what's happening and how goes the world and a lot of things that doesn't go good, you know? So I try to find my way to try to change that. And I know we thousands and thousands and millions too, that are the same feeling, you know? It's just a question of organization. That's when the problem starts.
But you don't feel negative about it because your music is very positive. So you have positive feelings about what could be changed, about the things you don't like. You think it's possible to change them?
The world and the inequalities are so big actually in the world that all the reasons has to be negative. So more the situation is tough, more you have to be positive. That's the only way out. So try to do things. No, it's not... so important to try to do the big thing. You have to do a lot of little things. Thousands of examples, I don't know. You can do a lot of little things to help on ecology every day. You can do a lot of little things with your neighbors every day when you in your neighborhood. You can try to help.
So obviously politics inspires your music, but what else inspires your music?
Everyday life. So in everyday life you got politics. That's the problem in this world. To inspire myself, it can be anything. Inspiration can come, you never know when. And really often for me, it's late at night in a bar and and was saying some stupid jokes with friends. And that's when sometimes the ideas flew. Yeah, for sure. That's a good place for inspiration.
It's been 6 years since your current album and the album before that. What have you been doing? I mean, there's a lot of songs on the new album, but what have you been doing in the meantime?
Doing this CD was really a little part of my time in 6 years. There was this very nice adventure, like producing the CD of Amadou and Mariam. So it was quite a lot of time, and spent my time with Amadou and Mariam, and spent my time in Mali and traveled through Mali, so that was a nice adventure. I also produced a CD of a friend of mine. He's from Kabylia, Algeria, singer called Aklidi. So we made his CD too. I made a book also with a friend from Poland. And of course, a lot of touring with my band, Radio Bemba. This last 6 years, a lot in South America. East Europe, very interesting, from Moscow to Istanbul. Going through Macedonia, going all Serbia, Bosnia, Croatia, Hungary, was very nice. Bulgaria. So touring, and that's, and 6 years, it goes quick.
When I asked, yeah. I didn't think you were going to have done everything in 6 years, but you have.
That's part of the things I've done, and maybe the more. All what I'm doing, it's have a relation with music. I'm not very good for anything else, so I have to find my way through that.
4 de la mañana.
Manu Chao, and we'll be hearing more from that interview and the track from his latest album, A La Radio Luna, later in the show. We've got 5 signed copies of the album to give away, and if you want to win one, email music.editor@guardianunlimited.co.uk and tell us which genre you'd invent for Manu's music.
Radio Reloj. 5 de la mañana.
I'm Rosie Swash, and you're listening to Music Weekly from Guardian Unlimited. Still to come, we'll be discussing the new movie about Ian Curtis and Joy Division. Plus, Tim will be telling us about Radiohead's plan to revive the music industry with the release of their new album, In Rainbows. That's all coming up, but first it's time for our reviews. It's all change at the top of the album and dongle charts this week. Sean Kingston's been replaced by the Sugar Babes as the UK's number one single. But as we said last week, their song ain't much copy either. Over in the album charts, Dave Grohl's confirmed his position as the nicest guy in rock by making sure James Blunt's Rain at number one lasted only 1 week. The Foo Fighters' Echoes, Silence, Patience, Grace, Knox Music's very own Cockney rhyming slang merchant into second place. Still, we have 3 new dongles for your ears this week, and we begin with something homegrown. This is Kate Nash and Mouthwash. This is the follow-up to Foundations, one of the biggest selling songs of the year, which was only kept off the top of the charts by Rihanna and her flipping umbrella. We had Young Kate on the show earlier in the summer, and rarely has the feedback from you guys on the blog been more split. Tim, what do you think of this one?
I think it is a shocker of a record. It sounds like a jingle for mouthwash, and I can't hear it without thinking that she's written it to get a deal with Listerine.
I don't think she would sell it to Listerine.
But that's what it sounds like. Can someone explain the metaphor?
It's not a metaphor. I think it's just her way of saying, this is me, this is who I am.
But what's so good about using mouthwash?
Doesn't it give you the image of that her...
What, like, of a normal person?
Yeah, like at her bathroom sink spitting... But
I mean, what does that mean? It's just like,
I guess that's her thing, isn't it? She's got quite sort of domestic imagery.
Yeah, but she's not using any poetry to describe it. She's literally just saying, oh, I use mouthwash. That's not poetry.
Ben.
I remember reading lots of the reviews for this album, and this track in particular got a lot of opprobrium based on the fact that young Kate may have a way with a tune, but not she's not Shakespeare. Which, you know, is fair enough, because very few of us are Shakespeare or can write a great song. I think that's got beautiful production and it's got a really nice sound to it, but there's a line about she drinks lots of cups of tea and it's just a bit cringeworthy.
Fair enough, those are your opinions. But, I mean, people really went for her on the blog when we had her on the show a little way back, and I'm always a bit surprised because she's a really nice person, but, you know,
I really like it.
How can anyone take such offence to a song this sweet and well-meaning?
Because it's just so... Bleh.
Moving on. We'll move on from ruminations about tea and mouthwash to something a bit more aggressive. This is Tick Tick Boom by The Hives. Ben, what do you think of that one?
That is more like it. I remember hearing The Hives probably about 6-7 years ago with Hate to Say I Told You So, and I was blown away by the fact that they were Swedish and very sharply dressed. I think that is brilliant. It's got tons of energy, and it's just a fantastic punk pop song that's not some... What number is some? Some 41.
I didn't know what you were going to say next. Tim?
Well, I think it's good to hear that they've, you know, been soaking up the influences since they started and developed their sound. Because when the first single came out that Ben was just talking about was when I started writing reviews at NME. Every single record that I reviewed sounded exactly like that. So I think if you're the Ramones, you can, you know, have your formula and stick with it. But the Hives aren't quite the Ramones.
It's a bit weird that they've been away for so long and they've come back and nothing about them has changed at all.
It's a bit frightening.
I don't even think they've got any older. They've obviously been in some sort of isolation pod.
They look the same, sound the same.
Okay, our final track this week is something of a personal choice, but I make no apologies about that. This is Radio Ladio by Metronomy. Metronomy is the alter ego of Brighton-based Joseph Mount. He's done great remixes for the likes of Kate Nash, Architecture in Helsinki, The Klaxons and The Young Knives, to name but a few, as well as his own stuff, of course. Debut album Pip Pain came out in June 2006, and since then Metronomy has been growing a small but perfectly formed fan base, and I count myself amongst them. I saw Metronomy at Reading and I was really blown away. I didn't expect them to be so good. He's got two guys on stage with him. I think there's a lot of stuff around at the moment that sounds like this, but there's just something about him that I find very interesting, and I think it's because he manages to make electronica that's made from all sorts of weird instruments actually sound quite organic and quite raw and unprocessed. But that's just my opinion. Tim Jones.
It's my opinion as well.
Oh, you like him?
Exactly.
I thought you would have hated
Why?
Him.
Why?
I don't know.
Because I don't like good records.
Maybe because you didn't come and see him with me at Reading.
I was probably busy. I would have loved to come and see him. I think it's amazing. I think there's a lot of human sort of... It comes across a lot of sort of warmth to the record. And it's a great pop song as well as being an inventive electronic record.
Have you seen him live?
I haven't.
They do sort of like funny dances.
More for funny dances. I do some funny dances, but I wouldn't buy my single.
Ben.
I really like the whole angular thing that's going on at the moment. We've talked quite a lot about math rock on this show in the past, and I think that's really, really cool. And I like the fact that it's kind of eerie and dark, and I feel quite dirty just listening to to 30 seconds of it.
I don't want to be in this room with you anymore.
I can leave if you want. Another reason that I really like that is that Paul absolutely hates metronomy and he refuses to have them anywhere near the podcast, but he's not here this week.
He's on holiday, so...
Nude, sometimes known as Big Ideas, by Radiohead, a band who continue to innovate both musically and commercially, because this week they announced that they'll let fans decide exactly how much they want to pay for their new album In Rainbows, their first studio album in 4 years. Tim, what is this honesty box thing that people are talking about?
Well, it's the idea that you get their songs and then you decide yourself how much money you're going to give them back for it and what you think it's worth.
And is that not, but that's not the only way that you can get it.
You can also buy like a sort of deluxe box set, which is cost, I think, £40.
Seems like quite a lot.
It is. And a cynic might say that it's Radiohead sort of, or actually by doing this, they're ripping off their hardcore fans who have to own everything. And then the sort of casual fans are just going to, you know, that's going to finance the fact that the casual fans can just go and sort of get it for free and not really pay any money.
Why have they done this?
Having just said that, I mean, I'm not a cynic, so I think it's actually a really great idea. Mm. And I think it's going to work because it's basically the first time it's been done by such a big band. And it's going to get a lot of publicity because of that. People are going to be talking about it. It's going to cause lots of debates. And they don't really need the money anyway, even if it all goes wrong. So it's just going to go down in sort of history almost as like the first person to try out this idea. Although they're not the first people to have actually done it.
Oh, are they not?
No. There was a guy called Rob McCulloch, who's like a Bolton-based singer-songwriter who did it through MySpace,
yeah.
And he told his fans to send back what they thought it was worth. And I've got some stats.
How much did he make?
And 68% of people actually sent the full £10 back.
Tim, is this just Radiohead sticking their finger up to the man again? And I mean, is it going to have more impact on the music industry than Keane, who released a single on a memory stick, and MIA, who released something on, I don't know, a USB keychain or something?
I think it'll have more impact than Keane releasing a single on. But, yeah, I think it's going to have an impact. I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, I'd like to think it was going to work because it's quite a, you know, it's a very caring and sharing approach to the whole sort of idea of making music and putting it out there. And I just think it's going to cause a debate, and that's what's quite important.
Yeah, we've had quite a lot of differing opinions on the blog already, because as soon as we found out, put up a blog about it, people were very excited. One person said, just paid £4 for the download. I suppose that's taking out the packaging, CD art and the like, and the amount it's fair to charge for the artist's work. And then other people, you know, could Radiohead be any more up their own arse? And then, you know, someone else got, you know, getting annoyed with that. Oh, I like this idea. Never mind those who are crying because they have to have all the environment munching paraphernalia that goes with a full version. I really think this is a good thing. And then someone's final word, I wouldn't pay anything. The band is overrated shite, which is not my opinion. I've heard a lot of people have heard the stuff because it's been playing it live for a long time. These are not particularly new material and I'm really looking forward to it. So I think personally I might pay the good old-fashioned £12.99, mm-hmm. what you used to pay down HMV for a CD.
That's a lot of money though, because they're not doing any of the packaging or the... You're basically paying them a lot more than they'd earn.
Well, maybe I won't then. I haven't thought about
it. You're lying in Tom's pockets there.
I've not thought this through. Okay.
The writer.
Who do you think?
I think we should get married.
I hold my hands up. I am a believer in Joy Division. Hallelujah.
Now remember, we are live, so no swearing or they will cut you off.
What about Big Dog's cock? Can you say that?
Got it in, it's good.
When I'm up there, singing.
Genius, actually.
They don't understand how much I give. How it affects me. I never meant for it to grow like this.
Get out!
I've no control anymore.
I love you.
What does that mean?
That's a trailer for Control, Anton Corbijn's new biopic of Ian Curtis, the lead singer of Joy Division. Curtis committed suicide in 1980 when he was just 23 years old, but of course his band went on to be one of the most important and influential British acts of all time. Tim Jones recently interviewed Sam Riley, the man who not only plays Curtis in the film, but was, until recently that is, the lead singer of the band 10,000 Things. Tim, it's a pretty intense part for any actor to play, Curtis's mental illness, his epilepsy. How did Riley, who's not an actor, find himself playing this part?
Well, he had done a little bit of acting before, like commercials and a bit of theatre. But the reason I think it came about was because his band had failed. Basically, he was at rock bottom. He was packing shirts in a factory after he had been, you know, tipped by, you know, the enemy and the music press to be the next big thing with his band, 10,000 Things. And basically the album they made was just a bit of a stinker.
Oh, no.
And it got 0 out of 10 in NME, and he was spotted crying in the local Leeds bars. So he went back to a factory and got in touch with his agent again, who basically put him forward for this, and it went from there. But the band don't sound anything like Joy Division. So
they
not at all. They had a song called Eating's Not Cheating. So
that classic. I was gonna say, you know, is he likely to return to it? But not only is it not successful, but it sounds like he was in quite a good emotional state to be playing someone like Curtis. How did he find it? I mean, what did he have to say about playing Curtis?
I think, well, he wasn't a big Joy Division fan.
Oh, really?
He didn't really know much about them. So to him, I think that it was, he thought that was quite a good thing, because if it had been his hero, someone he really worshipped, it'd been quite hard to step into that role. But because it was all new to him, I think he could sort of do it quite well.
Okay, well, let's leave that there, because Control is out in UK cinemas tomorrow, so you can judge Sam Riley's performance for yourself. And you can read Tim's excellent piece about the film and Riley in The Guide this Saturday. Okay, it's time to go back to our interview with our special guest this week, Manu Chao, who you can hear there with 13 Dias. It's taken from his latest album, La Rediolina, and it's his fourth studio release. It continues to mix genres and feature songs sung in a whole host of languages. With all this linguistic interplay to go along with his tunes, Ben asked Manu how he decides which language he writes his lyrics in.
I don't choose. I think the moment of the inspiration is the moment is the right moment. So if I'm in, we were talking before that the best place for inspiration is a bar. So if I'm in a bar in Rio de Janeiro, for sure, maybe the song is gonna come in Portuguese. If I'm in Paris, it's gonna be in French. If I'm in Spain or Latin America, it's gonna be in Spanish. That's why maybe so much songs in Spanish in general in my career, because I'm a Latin or in Spain or South America. And also a lot of countries are, I have to speak English, so I try to do my best, and I got some songs in English too.
And if you were sitting in a bar in Berlin, you wouldn't be taken to do something in German, though?
I'm not able, because I don't
know
the
language. It's not a nice language to sing in.
You know, you have to, first thing, of course, you need to be able to write in this language and understand it and learn about it. 10 years ago, I couldn't speak Portuguese, but I started living in Rio. And in Rio, if you don't speak Portuguese, it's very difficult, because all the friends, they make a lot of jokes. You have to defend yourself. If you don't speak Portuguese, you're dead. So I learned quick.
And when you were talking about Eastern Europe and all of these new countries, are you surprised how popular you are maybe in different territories, that, you know, when you're singing songs in different languages, that you're still popular over there?
Yeah, for us was, when we'd been touring in East Europe, it was a big surprise to see so much people in the shows, and because it was crowd everywhere. So, of course, it was a big surprise. But Maybe in England you're not used about that, but us in France, for example, we spend, when I was a teenager, I spent my time listening to English bands. I couldn't understand nothing. So for us, it's normal. And for East Europe, maybe. So now it's not only English, it's also Spanish and another language and Portuguese. I think the only people that feel strange to listen to music that is not in their own language are English people.
Manu Chao, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let me wrap up this week by saying thanks to Manu Chao for being our special guest. He's currently in the middle of a 3-night stand at Brixton Academy, but if, like most of the world, you don't live in London, you can catch him on the rest of his UK and European tour by heading to manuchao.net. Thanks also to Tim Jones for once again stepping into the breach. This extra-packed edition of Music Weekly was produced by Ben Green. I've been Rosie Swash, and this is Raining in Paradise by Manu Chao.
Go crazy, it's an atrocity. In Congo, still no place to be. They keep me badly, it's a calamity.
Guardian Unlimited.